start today with Masechta Pesachim. Beis Hashem. No promises that we'll finish Masechta Pesachim. That's a multi-year project. Masechta has a few words of introduction to this Masechta. And I'll just read some parts of that introduction to you. He says the following, that this Masechta is going to address what we call the mitzvos hanogos b'chag ha-Pesach. And the question that we have here is, why is it called Masechta Pesachim in the plural? And the answer is because of one particular mitzvah that has more than one Pesach. It has two, and that's what? The Korban Pesach. There's Korban Pesach Rishon, and there's Korban Pesach Sheni. So since half of this Masechta, the Be'erach, I mean, he doesn't say that, but I can tell you that half of this Masechta is dedicated to the laws of the Korban Pesach. And some say that if you ever want to learn Kodshim, this is the best place to start, is with Masechta Pesachim. So therefore the plural is used to include Pesach Sheni as well. Now, when we talk about the mitzvot that are nogos per Pesach, we can divide them into two categories. There are the los ases and the eses. And perhaps the most profound, or shall we say classical, los aseh regarding Pesach is called what? Chametz. Now, what's unique about chametz? Chametz has, number one, not only an Iser Achila, but also an Iser Hana. So for example, if I want to sell my chametz to a guy on Pesach, or give it to him even as a gift, that he'll owe me something in return, that's considered a violation of the Iser Hana of chametz. So what's unique, number one, about chametz is that it's Isure Hana. Number two, and here the Torah goes even further, a mitzvah biur, that we have to destroy our chametz. It's not enough that I abstain from eating or enjoying the benefit of my chametz. I even have to destroy it. And then we have other mitzvos of Pesach. We had the mitzvah matzah, the mitzvah morah, the mitzvah sipritzis mitzrayim, the mitzvah korban Pesach. Now, where does the Torah indicate that you're not allowed to have hanah from chametz? So if you open up to Shmos Yud Gimel, it says V'lo ye ochel chametz. It doesn't say lo yochal chametz, but lo ye ochel. And the Gemara later on Daf Chaf Hei is going to try to understand why it says lo ye ochel chametz. And the Gemara derives from that the Torah wants to indicate that you're not even allowed to have benefit from the chametz. It's aser b'hano. Now, what's the punishment for violating lo yeochel chametz? Obviously, we're talking about a case of mezid. It's not that he forgot it was Pesach, or he didn't realize that he's not allowed to eat chametz. He knew very well, and he deliberately violated this isur. So the Torah says, and now going back to Shmos Perek Yud Beis, it says, kol ochel machmetzes v'nichrasa nefesh ahi me'adas Yisrael. That chametz incurs an isur kares. And that puts chametz in a very, very unique category. It's not enough that we said that you have an Iser Hanan chametz. It's not enough that we said that the mitzvah is to be mavar the chametz. But on top of that, the violation of achilas chametz incurs kares. And that, as we said, is a very unique category that applies to chametz. For example, if you eat bas of a cholov, you get malchus for that. If you eat nevela, you get malchus. But in the case of chametz, you're chay of kares. However, what happens if he violates the Iser Hana of chametz? What's the punishment for that? So we said that that there's a drasha lo ye'ochel chametz, that lo ye'ochel tells you you're not allowed to even benefit from the chametz. That's not explicit in the pasuk. Nowhere does the Torah say explicitly that you're not allowed to benefit from the chametz. It's derived from the tzerei under the aleph of lo ye ochel. And therefore, if you violate the iser hanav chametz, unless you make a profit from the chametz, that's not considered an Iser Kares. It's an Iser Doraisa, but without an Onesh Kares. Now, the Iser of Achilas Chametz fits into three different categories. Number one is during Pesach itself, and during the Chag, the 7 days of Chag, if you violate the Iser Chametz deliberately, you get Kares for that. And then we have what we call an Iser Chametz on Erev Pesach. That means from Chatzos Hayom, midday on Erev Pesach. And then we have what's called Chametz She'avol of HaPesach, after Pesach. Now, as far as Erev Pesach is concerned, we'll mention that the Mishnah records at the beginning of the second parak a Machlokas Tanoim. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that there's no Iser Chametz, at least on a Doraisa level, on Erev Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda says that even on Erev Pesach, there's an Iser Lav, which means that if you violate the Achilas Chametz according to Rabbi Yehuda on Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, then you get Malchus for that. There's no Iser Kares. So you have three categories now. You have Chametz on Pesach, which if, again, deliberately, you get Kares. You have Chametz on Erev Pesach, which according to Rav Shimon is Mutter. You have Hanan Chametz of Chametz, even on Pesach itself, it's only a Lav, but it's not an Iser Kares. And then you have Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that Erev Pesach, after Chatzos Hayom, there's an Iser Lav, but there's no Chiyuv Kares. So no one would postulate that you would get Kares for eating Chametz any time other than during the Chag, the 7 days of Chag. Now, what about enjoying Chametz before Chatzos Hayom? So that's going to be the subject of Machlokas Tanoim on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis here in the first parak. According to Rabbi Meir, already from the sixth hour, which would be, let's say, the perfect clock at 11 a.m., 1 hour before Chatzos, there will be an Iser Chametz, which will include both Achila and an Iser Hanah. And Rabbi Yehuda says that the Iser Achilas Chametz already begins in the fifth hour. That would mean on a perfect clock already at 10 a.m. The Iser Hanah, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is postponed until 11 a.m., until the sixth hour. And then the Mishnah quotes a third Shita, that's the Shita of Ram Gamliel, and he makes a difference between what's called Truma and Chulin. That Chulin, he accepts the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, is Aser Bachila from the fifth hour. But Truma, that means you took grains, one of the five species of grains, and you were Mafrish Truma, and then you took that Truma and you baked it as a bread. In Truma, they delayed the Iser Chametz, according to Rav Gamliel, until the sixth hour. They didn't want to make it so early because then you might be destroying Truma. So we want to give Truma, you know, the expanded possibility. Now, Chametz before Chatzos Hayom, according to everyone, is only Derabbanan. So the earliest time for an Iser Doraisa Lav of eating Chametz would be from Chatzos and on, according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita. However, what about Chametz She'avol of HaPesach? Again, obviously once Pesach is open, you're allowed to eat Chametz, once it's over, but there's Chametz that was in his possession during the Chag. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Torah says about that Chametz, that once it becomes Asur, it's always Asur. So any Chametz that was included in the Iser of Achilas Chametz during the Chag is Asur min HaTorah, even after the Chag. Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's only a Takonis Chachomim, it was a Knas, because he violated the Iser Bal Yerah Bal Yimotz. Okay, we haven't spoken yet about the main subject of our discussion today, and that's Bal Yerah Bal Yimotz, which means owning Chametz. Now, with regard to possession of Chametz, we have a los aseh and an eseh. In fact, we have not only one los aseh, but two los asehs. The Torah says in Shmos Yud Gimel, lo yeroy lecha chametz. The Torah says in Shmos Yud Beis, lo yimotzeh. And the Gemara is going to say that there's a fundamental difference between these two lavim. One is lo yiroe and one is lo yimotze. That's going to be a major, major issue here in the first parak. And then on top, to boot, we have a mitzvah saseh that requires us to destroy the chametz. Because the Torah says, also in Shmos Yud Beis, Ach b'yom harishon tashbisu siyar mibateichem. And this means that you have to destroy the chametz. Now there's machlokas tanoim at the beginning of the second parak. How do you destroy the chametz? Rabbi Yehuda insists that you have to burn the chametz. The chachamim say no. Hashbasoso bechol dover. Anyway, you want to get rid of it is okay. You can be zorim mafar l'ruach. You can take the chametz and turn it into crumbs and throw it to the wind, or you can throw it into the ocean. And now we're getting much closer to our subject matter for today. We're not there yet, but we're close to it. And that's called Bitul Chametz. As far as the Torah law is concerned, you only have to destroy Chametz that you own. That's yours. But now we have an option of completely circumventing the requirement of Bir Chametz if we make it ownerless. If I give up my ownership on the Chametz. Now, normally, in order to give up ownership on something that's yours, you require what's called hefker. Hefker, okay, that's a word we should write down, right? Okay, I don't want to destroy this. I worked very hard on this yesterday. So, hefker requires, at least, again, this is also my focus, but according to Rabbi Yossi, hefker requires that I get three people together and I make a declaration in their presence that I am making this ownerless. Bittul cannot be identified as hefker because bittul doesn't require that I gather together three people and declare that my chametz is batel. Not only that, bittul doesn't even require a language of hefker. The language of hefker means I am being mafkir my possessions. In the case of bittul, what I'm saying is it's not significant in my eyes. It's like he offered the ara. It's like the earth, the dust of the earth. So now we come to the following conclusion, that bittul is something that the Torah allows, and we're going to have to see exactly where we know this from, and once I achieve a bittul on my chametz, that's called mevatlo belibo, then it's not considered chametz. Again, I don't want to say it's not my chametz, and I'm just making it hefker, because again, the various differences between bittul and hefker. But on the other hand, I have to somehow circumvent the iser of owning chametz. So if I'm not making it ownerless, then how do I save myself or spare myself of bal yirah bal yimatzeh if it's my chametz and I wasn't mafkir it? Again, if I went ahead and I was mafkir, I got together three people and I said that all my chametz sticker whiskey is hefker, and then of course those three people jumped on the whiskey, but anyway, so if I made it hefker, that's one thing, then I for sure circumvent the mitzvah of tashbisu, because it's not mine. It says tashbisu siyar mi batecha means your chametz. But if on the other hand I'm just being mevatel the chametz, believe me, I didn't even make a public declaration, nor did I formulate it as hefker, so then it still is mine. So how does bittul work if it's not hefker? And somehow bittul means that it's not significant in my eyes. And if it's not significant in my eyes, that's not the chametz that the Torah prohibited. We find a similar concept of bittul in Avodah Zarah. Like, for example, in Avodah Zarah, if a guy worships an idol and then he decides, I don't believe in this idol anymore, so he can be mevatel and it loses its chshivus. There you might have to make a very significant physical change to the idol. Here you don't have to change anything. You didn't change the chametz. It's a beautiful piece of chametz. It's sitting on my table. So Rabbi Yossi, this is going to be my quiz question for you. How could it be that I have ownership over a piece of chametz? It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of chametz. You know, just think of the bakery of your choice. And it's sitting on my living room table, and I don't violate, not by your raw, not by your motzei, and I'm not chayv in tashbisu. And the answer is bittul. If you hold that bittul is not hefker, and again, we brought many proofs that bittul is not hefker, but yet bittul means that it's not chametz as far as I'm concerned. You have, now you have a subjective definition of chametz. For you, it's chametz. For me, it's not chametz. I was mevatel it, and therefore for me, it's not chametz. It's a wild idea. Okay, now we get to the subject matter of our discussion for today, and that's called bedikas chametz. Now, nowhere does the Torah tell me that I have to search and find and destroy chametz.
The Torah says if I have chavetz and I know about it, that's called chavetz yodua, I have to get rid of it. Here we're talking about a case where I don't know that I have chavetz. But you know what? Once, during the last 365 days, I went into that room with chavetz. Maybe I forgot the chavetz there. So now, the Rabbanon instituted what's called bedikas chavetz. Bedikas chavetz is a classical case of a takanas chachamim. Again, what's the purpose of bedikas chavetz, ultimately? In other words, why did the Rabbanon institute bedikas chavetz? So that's going to be a gigantic machlokas, but let's say if we go with the simple pshat of Tosfos, and Rashi is a little bit more complicated, but Tosfos says we're afraid that if you leave the chametz and you find it on Pesach, you might be tempted to eat the chametz. I mean, there are many things that are asur, and yet we don't have a mitzvah bedika. You know, the Torah doesn't say that if I bring, you know, I don't know if anyone here in the room have a dog? No? Okay, that's interesting. I thought I was in Katamon. I guess I should have asked if you have a cat. But if you own a dog, then why should you feed the dog kosher meat? You're allowed to feed the dog nevela. Nevela is mutar b'hanah. And nevela is a lot cheaper than kosher meat. So he has different kinds of meat in his house. He has meat for his dog, and that's nevela. He's not allowed to eat it himself. And he has kosher meat. So maybe we should require bedika. The Chachamim didn't require bedika to check around and make sure that you don't bring any nevela into your house because you might inadvertently eat nevela. And yet with regard to chametz, Tosa says that we're afraid you might eat the chametz. So that's going to be the subject of our discussion today. So now, when you have a mitzvah derabbanan, we've been, for the last 6 weeks or so, I don't know exactly how long, we've been studying the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So a mitzvah derabbanan requires a bracha. The Gemara, of course, has a lot of discussion, a lot of inhibition about that. How could it be that you make a bracha? It says, Asher kitshon v'tzosu v'tzivonu l'hadluk Ner Chanukah, where heichon tzivonu. But in any event, the bottom line is, and that's the sugya Masechta Shabbos that we covered, that you make a bracha not only on a mitzvah d'oraisa, but even on a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So bedikas chametz, insofar as it's a classical case of a mitzvah d'rabbanan, would require bracha. So we're going to have two issues, and we're going to cover that in Mirat Hashem in about a month or so, maybe less than a month. We'll see how fast we go. One issue is, maybe there shouldn't be a bracha on bedik at all. And the second issue is going to be, well, if there is a bracha on bedik, what should the bracha be? What's the nusach of the bracha? So, Chachamim were misaken a takana of bedikas chametz, and they required what's called ar haner. You have to use a candle. I don't know if it has to be a candle, but some sort of very concentrated light that will allow you to go into small areas, nooks and cracks, and look for chametz. And you have to go through any place where you ever entered into with chametz. And then you have to destroy the chametz. Another question that we're going to have face here is, why do you have to destroy the chametz? Maybe you could be mevatel the chametz, right? We said there are two options. There's bittel, and then there's destroying the chametz. Well, in this case, if you mevatel the chametz, where does the chametz end up? In your house. And Tosfos says that the Rabbanon are not going to be happy about that, because if you leave chametz in your house, even though there's no bayirah bayimatzah because you mevatel the chametz, nevertheless you might be tempted to forget yourself and eat the chametz. Another issue that we have to cover is, when is the exact time for bedikas chametz? And the mission itself, and that's what we want to start now, B'ezer Hashem, Arli Arbasa. The night going into the 14th. So this is what you might call the beginning of Erev Pesach, the beginning of Yudalid, the 14th of Nisan. And the question is, why does the Mishnah use the word Ar? It could have said Leil Arbasar, or Erev Arbasar. Later on at the end of Masechta Pesachim, we talk about Erev Pesach, or Arve Pesachim. Here it says orally our boss. So if you can make a note of it, the Baal Hama'ar, and again, pardon the pun here, but the Baal HaMa'or, who's the great luminary, he says that the word "or" is deliberately chosen here to indicate that Bedikas Chametz should take place while it's still light out. You know, this is something that's familiar to us when we learned the sugyas of Ner Chanukah, because we were wondering when is the time for Ner Chanukah. And some say it's with Tzeisa Kochavim, which means that it's a classical mitzvah of Lila. Lila begins with Tzeisa Kochavim. And others say, no, we should be lighting Ner Chanukah earlier, before Tzeisa Kochavim. Let's say as early as Shkia Sachama. And you may remember the Gemara, according to the Rambam's opinion, Darshan's the Pasuk about Amud HaEsh, that the Amud HaEsh came even while the Amud HaAnan was still functioning. So the Amud HaEsh was Makdim, and the Amud HaEsh now is an illusion that we should also be Makdim and light Ner Chanukah before night. Here too, says the Baal HaMa'or, without making the equation to Chanukah, in the case of Bedikas Chametz, we want you to start your Bedikah while it's still light out. And the question is why? The Baal HaMa'or doesn't give us a reason for that. Anybody have some sort of an intuitive response as to why, according to Baal HaMa'or, orally abasa, meaning that we should start our bedikah when it's still light out?
You see better.
Not sure if you see better. Again, keep in mind that the Mishnah requires Bedikah L'Or HaNer. And generally speaking, the Or HaNer is at night, because we have a principle called Shraga Matira Mai Mahani, that, you know, a candle is not really effective when there's natural light out. Oh, excellent. So there is a principle of Zvizim Akdim LaMitzvahs, but L'Chor, that's irrelevant. Why is that irrelevant?
Excellent
but irrelevant. In other words, you get an excellent grade for the brilliance of the thought, but it's not right. Why is it not right? Because, and this is going to be a sugya on Daf Dalet, that Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs only applies on the same day. Vayashkem Avram Baboker. In fact, the Gemara goes even a step further, that Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs starts at the beginning of the Ono. You know, every day is divided into two Onos. There's day and there's night. So, for example, the mitzvah of Mila applies by day. So, there's no Zrizim Akdimim to go beyond the day, meaning earlier than the day. Or, for example, the mitzvah of Laila means you should start Bizrizus at the earliest time that's Laila. Here, the problem is that according to Baal HaMa'or, he wants the Bedikas Chametz to take place before Laila. And before Laila, that can't be Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs. You could say Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs within the framework of Laila and begin with the inception of Laila at the earliest possible moment. But R means before Laila. And it sounds like, this is pretty way out, that the Baal HaMa'or holds that Bedikas Chametz means creating a Chametz-free environment, so to speak, and that has to be accomplished even before the day itself. And again, he doesn't mean that he finished his bedika before Tzeis, but once he begins his bedika before Tzeis, that's called early arbasa in the Baal HaMa'or's understanding, then he's already in the process of freeing himself of chametz. Now, as we discussed earlier, the Easter chametz begins not on Pesach itself, but on Erev Pesach. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Isser Chametz begins at Chatzos. Everybody agrees, though, that there's a mitzvah Bir Chametz, and that's a mitzvah Doraisa, and that has to take place on Erev Pesach at Chatzos. The Rabbanon may have extended this concept of an Isser Chametz to encompass the 14th of Nisan. Again, on a Torah level, we take the 14th of Nisan and we chop it up into small pieces. And only one part of the 14th of Nisan is Asur B'Chametz. That's from Chatzos on the afternoon of Erev Pesach and on. But the Rabbanan expanded and they included the entire day. Now, we can't go too far with this. It's not true that there's an Isur Chametz even bin Rabbanon during the entire day, because we don't destroy our Chametz until the morning, and not only the morning, but even late in the morning, somewhere mid-morning. Right? That's the Mishnah Berurah time, mid-morning. I'm just joking with you. But if anyone wants to learn Mishnah Berurah today, Hilchas Chanukah, mid-morning. And I'm also reminded to mention that if anyone wants to learn with me Masechta Megillah, you got to get up really early. So we start at 7:30 on Rechov HaChish. Okay. I also have an Ian share Masechta Megillah once a week, Wednesday nights at 8:30. So that's just a paid political announcement. Now, getting back to this question, the Baal HaMor might say that as far as the mitzvah of Bir Chametz is concerned, where we're going to see soon that the Torah wants you to destroy the Chametz by midday. You know, it's even before midday you should be actively involved in getting rid of your Chametz. So now we're expanding even on a Doraisa level the status of Chametz on Erev Pesach to include even before Chatzos. Again, not as far as Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzi is concerned, or as far as Isra Achila, that begins the earliest with Chatzos. But the Torah itself says Tashbisu, which means get rid of your Chametz by Chatzos, so that you should be Chametz free by midday. Now at this point, the Torah is already expanding the Chametz situation beyond the afternoon, meaning earlier than the afternoon. The Rabbanim may have gone a step further and said that the entire Yud Dalet, the entire day of Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, is included in this mitzvah of Bir Chametz. Now, if we take that logic, that the entire 14th is included in Bir Chametz, then one could argue that the Bir Chametz should be achieved before you enter into the 14th. In other words, if Bir tells me, make sure to do everything in your power to get rid of your Chametz, you should be in a Chametz-free environment by the beginning of the 14th, you have to start that process before you enter into the 14th. So, for example, if let's say Tzeisak HaChavim is at 7 p.m., and he starts his bedikah at 7:05, then during that 5-minute period from the inception of Laila at 7 until 7:05 when he began his bedikah, he's living in a chametz defiled environment, so to speak. He's owning chametz. And we want to get this process of getting rid of your chametz up and running even before he enters into the 14th, and that's called orally our boss.
Why would he have to finish it before it says in that case?
In other words, what the Rabbanan did is they wanted to force you or obligate you to make a demonstration that you're already getting rid of your chametz, so that you're already at that. Like, for example, the Torah says that you should be chametz free by chatzos. Let's go on to the Raisa level first before we get to the Rabbanan. Does that mean that I have to complete my process of bir chametz by chatzos? Or is it enough that I begin the process before chatzos? And if I'm actively involved in destroying my chametz, that's like almost like a bittul chametz. You know, I'm already demonstrating that I'm not interested in chametz. It's not choshev v'eina. It doesn't have any significance. The Rabbanon, following that pattern, also want you to begin your process of bir before you enter into the moment of bir. And how do you begin that process before bir, before the zman of bir? Says the Baal HaMor, that's called orally arbasar, when it's still light out. Bokim es hachametz li'or haner. Now, what does the word chametz mean? I mean, half of this, the first half of Masechta Pesachim is dedicated to the Isur chametz and anything around the Isur chametz. And what's most critical in the first half of the second Pesachim is to define what exactly is chametz. And that's not a simple matter. The chemist will call chametz a certain process of fermentation, but I'm not sure that that's identical with chametz on a Doraisa level. The Torah works with its own definitions of what chametz is. But there are many different categories of chametz. The classical use of the term chametz is what we call chametz gomur. Okay, you want to write that down? Chametz gomur. Chametz gomur means it's absolute chametz. We spoke about a violation of an iser kares if you eat chametz b'mezid. That's chametz gomur. There are other categories of chametz. For example, there's a category called chametz al yedei ta'arovas, which means that chametz fell into a mixture. We have another category called chametz nuksha. You know, let's say you have a pasha ipsha, means a piece of bread that began to spoil. So you might feed it to your dog, but you wouldn't necessarily, you know, dedicate it for human consumption. If the Mishnah says bodkim es ha-chametz with a hey ayidia, and in the Mishnaic language, unless it's qualified, the word chametz means chametz gamur, total, classical, healthy chametz, you know, beautiful piece of bread, what the Gemara is going to call later on a gluski yefefa, then it could be that as far as chametz ayidei taroves, a mixture of chametz, we have many products today on the market that have chametz in it, a zillion products. Or if you're talking about chametz nuksha, let's say the chametz is old and it began to get stale, maybe there's no chiyuv bedika. Maybe when the Rabbanon added this whole enterprise and they enacted a requirement of bedika, they only did it as far as chametz gomer is concerned. Why? Because chametz gomer is much more strict than the other categories that we mentioned. Chametz gomer, if violated b'mezid with achila, generates kares. That's not true for chametz ayidei taroves. It's not true for chametz nuksha. Those are chametz, categories of chametz that are prohibited, but not with the ultimate stringency of chametz gamur. And then the Mishnah says liara ner. Now, let's say, for example, you have a window, and if you look out that window on a clear night in the spring, you will see the light of the moon. And the Gemara is going to have an actual discussion about this. Maybe the light of the moon, if it's intense enough, would light up your room. Then we're going to have another discussion. What happens if he failed to implement bedika on the nighttime, for whatever reason? Then he'll have to do bedika in the daytime. Then he has a skylight, and it's absolutely flooded with sunlight. To what extent does the Mishnah require or laner? Is this some sort of a gzeiras hakosuv, meaning it's an absolute requirement without any flexibility, or just that or laner is simply a way, a means of achieving light so that your bedika is a successful, meaningful bedika? Like, can I use some sort of other source of light, even if it's not or haner? You know, in Hanukkah, as I keep coming back to Hanukkah, because Hanukkah is fresh in my mind, you know, we have a look of ner Hanukkah. There's no other way of fulfilling that mitzvah without a ner. Whether it's a ner made out of this or ner made out of that, but it's got to be a ner. What about bedikas chametz? At this point in time, I would say that the Mishnah seems to be postulating an absolute requirement of ner. It's that no other kinds of are. You know, the stars might shine, and the moon might give light, and the sun gives light. None of that is sufficient. And this leads me to the most practical question in contemporary life about electric lights. Can I use an electric light for bedikas chametz? You know, in a certain sense, an electric light is probably superior. It's more functionally, it's more successful in achieving my goal of finding the chametz than even a ner. You know, if you come with a nair, what could happen? It might catch fire, the whole place will go on smoke. So you know, you're very nervous about the nair. If you have a flashlight that's battery-generated energy, then it's so much easier without any nervous tension, any angst, you know, that you place the light of the flashlight into corners. How many people in this room are willing to admit that they use a flashlight for bedikas chametz? Oh, two people. Oh, it went up. Three people. Well, that's not bad. Okay. So some people use a flashlight, present company excluded. My meaning is I start the bedikah with a ner, just to be yotzezayin the ner, you know, for the formal custom of the midigat doros. But then I switch to a flashlight. I can't do a bedikah with a candle. I mean, I'm so nervous. So that's the question here. How do we understand the ora ner? Is it an absolute requirement? And we're going to see a pella of a gemara. The gemara is going to derive this requirement of ora ner from psukim, from verses in the Tanakh. I mean, that seems to indicate that it's an absolute rule. It's a gzeiras hakosuv that you have to have an or and there. Otherwise, it's not called bedika. Now, the concept of bedika, by the way, is not limited to chametz. In what other areas of halacha do we find bedika?
Nida.
Excellent. Nida. What else?
Avodah Zarah.
Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, maybe. Yeah. What else? Excellent. That's called Bidikas Toloi. Now it's interesting.
There's also a mitzvah biur, or biur of
I never saw a mitzvah beer in Chodesh, so you're going to have to teach me about that.
Oh, Chodesh.
Don't embarrass me with Yiddish. I never learned about it. I know a little bit about Chodesh, but...
Oh, Chodesh,
just accepting Be'avunas HaChamim, that there are three categories of Bedika. There's Bedikas Chametz, there's Bedikas Toloim, and there's Bedikas Nida. Asher is pointing out that in Eretz Yisrael there might be a mitzvah of bedika to look for avonah zarah. Now, in all the cases of bedika in halacha, barring one exception, there's no bracha on bedika. In fact, there's no mitzvah of bedika. Why is it that in all cases of bedika we omit the bracha, with this exception? Oh, Bedikas Chametz. So this is a klal that you have to memorize and really let it penetrate into your minds. We do not make a bracha on a lo saseh. When we avoid a violation of a lo saseh, there's no bracha. A bracha is limited to mitzvah saseh. Whether they're d'oraisa, d'rabbanan is irrelevant, as we saw in the sugya of Chanukah, but it's a positive command. So, for example, if I ask you what's the difference between a mitzvah seh and a mitzvah lo saseh, as far as halacha is concerned, we divide up the 613 into two categories: ramach mitzvah seh and shasah mitzvah lo saseh. Who cares about it? Bless you. Top on your list should be a bracha. Avoidance of a lo taseh, even if it requires an action, will not generate a bracha. So, for example, I'm afraid that there might be toloim in this piece of lettuce. I have to avoid toloim because of the lo saseh. There are many lo sasehs that enjoin me from eating toloim. But there's no positive command to be bodek toloim. And therefore, if, let's say, for example, I would somehow convince myself that there are no toloim, there's no mitzvah of bedika. And therefore there's no bracha. The same is true for Anita. You know, again, we're afraid that maybe she has dam and she doesn't know about it, etc., etc., so she has to be bodek. That's only to avoid the losas of avoiding a violation of Anita. However, in the case of Bedikas Chametz, Chachamim instituted a mitzvah saseh of Bedikas Chametz. To what extent? Of course you make a bracha, but moreover, there are seven different shitos as to why, to try to answer the question, why we don't recite Shachiyanu. Did you ever think about it? Why is there no Shachiyanu on the mitzvah Bedikas Chametz? Every mitzvah that comes from time to time, and you get a first opportunity, you recite Shachiyanu. We spoke about Ner Chanukah Shachiyanu, Mikra Megillah Shachiyanu, Sukkah Shachiyanu, Lulav Shachiyanu, Shofar Shachiyanu, etc., etc. Why is there no Shachiyanu on Bedikas Chametz? Seven different answers. Oh, so if seven different Rishonim thought that there should be Shachiyanu, and none of them give the answer that it's a lo saseh, because if you're going to say it's a lo saseh, you're in trouble, because then there shouldn't be a brach at all on Bedikas Chametz. But the thrust of what they're saying is that Bedikas Chametz is a positive mitzvah. And that's a chiddush, because the word bedika, if you did a word search, the screen would always show up, no bracha. You know, press in the word bedika, no bracha. Bedika is avoidance of a lo saseh. But in the case of bedikas chametz, we're talking about a mitzvah saseh. So let's say you're a chassidish yid, and you go to mikveh before you do a mitzvah. I don't know if there's anyone here who fits that category. But certainly, you know, the special mitzvahs, you want to go to mikveh to be tar v'kadosh when you do the mitzvah. I would say that a chassidish yid should go to mikveh before bedikas chametz, because bedikas chametz is a mitzvah saseh, albeit the rabbanon, but a mitzvah saseh. Now, do I have to check everything? Could you imagine, Rabosa, if you had to check everything? In modern contemporary life, there's just no end, Baruch Hashem, to how many different places you could be looking for chametz in theory. So the Mishnah whittles it down. Where do you have to do bedika kol makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz ein tzarich bedika? You only have to do bedika in a place which is described as a makom she'machnisim bo chametz. But if it's a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, you don't have to do bedika. Now, when I was a kid, we used to go to summer camps, and on a rainy day, you know, we were bored out of our brains because we couldn't go out and play ball, so we did what's called rafter softball. What you took a softball and you threw it up on the rafter, and if you could get it on the rafter, then you got X number of points, you know, depending on how many seconds it would stand until it fell from the rafter. So the question is, in chametz, do I have to check on top of the rafter? So that's considered a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz. You might have softballs there, but you won't have chametz there. But what about the following case? Let's say, for example, a shamash. Shamash, I'm not talking about the Ner Chanukah shamash, but I'm talking about a shamash that serves, you know, the butler or whatever you want to call it, who serves food on the table. So he doesn't eat at the table. He eats in his dining area, but very often he goes down in the middle of a meal to resupply, you know, what's it called? Condiments? Is there such a word in English? Yeah. Right? You know, you run out of mustard, or there's no pickles on the table, or for example, you know, they ran out of wine, so he goes down to the wine cellar in the middle of a meal, and once in a blue moon, he goes down with a pito biado. You know, he's holding on to a pita, which is chametz gomer. To what extent do we have to worry about makom shemachnisim bo chametz? Is it A, that at least on one occasion chametz went in there? Is it B, that it's generally so that he brings chametz there? Is it C, even if I don't know that even on one occasion he brought chametz, but he might bring chametz in? We don't know that he ever brought chametz in. That itself makes it into a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. And these issues are going to have a tremendous repercussion about the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. How extensive is the scope of this definition called makom shemachnisim bo chametz? So on both sides, the word makom here is very important, because bedikas chametz is a classical case of a chametz bias. In other words, just like I have to put up a mezuzah in my bias, I have to be bodek my bias to make sure that it's chametz free. Now the Mishnah is saying, nay, it's not bedikas bias, it's bedikas makom. And you could divide up the bias into many different makomos, and then you have to define which makom generates a chiyuv bedika. And the answer to the Mishnah is, it's a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. Why does the Mishnah go into the negative? The Mishnah should have said, makom shemachnisim bo chametz chayav bedika. Instead, the Mishnah says, nein. You have to assume that every makom that you own, anything in your house, all that you possess requires bedika, unless, this is what we call guilty until proven innocent, the exception is going to be a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz. And the language of ein machnisim bo chametz sounds like it's an absolute, we know for sure that not even on one occasion did he bring chametz into this place. Once he brought in chametz on one occasion, then the poskim say that's already considered a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. My question is going to be, what happens if on one occasion he brought in chametz, but he swears on a stack of Bibles that he took out the chametz from there? So he went in and he came out. Is it enough that it's in the airspace one time during the year? That makes it into a makom shemachnisim bo chametz? It just entered into the airspace? What happens if a man has two windows and he throws a piece of chametz inside one open window and it flies out the other open window? Is that called a makom shemachnisim bo chametz? But the Mishnah's language seems to be that if you want to exempt a certain place and take it out of the guilty until proven innocent, you have to prove innocent that it's a machnisim bo chametz klal afilu pam achas. Never ever did he bring chametz into that place. Bameh omru shtei shuros b'martev. We have a machlokes between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai about the case of a martev. A martev is like a cellar in which they pile, you know, what do we call barrels? Okay, I was looking for the English word of tzinsenet. You know what I mean? Like like, is that what it's called in English? A jar, like, you know, when you buy pickles, you know, it's that's called a jar of pickles? Is it a different word? Okay, we'll use the word jar. In Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, they use the word tzinsenet. So you have these cellars where they put one tzinsenet on top of the other, called barrels, called jars, whatever it is. And that's a place that normally you wouldn't bring in chametz. It's a storage area. But on occasion, you might bring in chametz. That's what... Now again, there are different... There are different... shuros. Shuros means, you know, there are what do you call it?
Rows.
So the different rows. There are the outer rows, and then there are inner rows. So you went in, you know, when you go in, you don't really penetrate into the inner rows. You just look at the outer rows, and maybe you only look at the top rows because you don't pull something out. The whole thing will fall off like an avalanche. So the Mishnah says that the machlokas, exactly which shuros, which rows, you have to check, which is going to be a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, is only b'makom shemachnisim bo chametz. Meaning, when he goes down to the storage room, on occasion he has chametz in his hand. If he can swear on his on a stack of Bibles that he never ever took chametz into this marteif, into this cellar, let's say where he has wine barrels or whatever he has in there, that's called a makom she'emach nisimo chametz. But if it's a classical martev where in the middle of a meal the shamash goes down to resupply wine on the table because they used up all the wine, that's called a makom she'emach nisimo chametz. And now on this martev, what do you have to do? You have to take apart the entire martev from beginning to end. I mean, you'll be there for a month. So on that, there's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. We're talking on a martech shemachnisim al chametz. Beit Shammai omrim shtei shuros al pnei kol amartech. Beis Hillel omrim shtei shuros achitzonos shehem ha'elyonos. So Beit Shammai required that you have to assume that even the second row, you don't have to go through all the rows, but not only the outer row, but even the second row requires chametz. And Beis Hillel says, no, all you have to do are the top two layers, and that's where you have to check for chametz. So the Gemara is going to spend on Daf Ches an entire sugya to try to get into the details of this machlokas. Now we're ready for the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. What does the word ar mean? And the final maskana we mentioned at the outset, ar means the night. But right now, the Gemara is not sure. The Gemara has two possibilities as to what the word "ar" means. One interpretation is that there is light, and the other interpretation is that the word "ar" is a reference to a specific time period, not whether there is light or not. It might be Yom, it might be Laila. Is there, you know, what time period are we dealing with? Is a specific time period? It's either Yom or Laila. Again, the first interpretation is that Or means light, and that might not depend upon our definition of Yom or Laila. So the issue is not whether Or means Yom or Laila, but rather, is there light or is there not light? So if you had light during the Laila, that would be the time for Bedika. If you had darkness during the Yom, then that would be an appropriate time for Bedika. What do we say? So let's go through it. I mean, again, I was just giving you an introduction, but let's see. My R. What does the word R mean? Does it mean Yom? Does it mean Laila? Now, you and I know that the final maskon is that R is Laila, but the Gemara is not is absolutely not convinced at this point. And Rav Huna's opinion is Nagi. Nagi means that the word R refers to daytime. And the daytime is called in the language of the Mishnah Ar because Vayera Vayvoker Vayhi Ar means that when day breaks you have Ar. So the word Ar is appropriate to describe the daytime. And therefore, according to Rav Huna, the time for Bedika is daybreak or sometime during the day. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lele. Rabbi Yehuda says the word Ar, paradoxically, even though it says light, it's referring to the absence of light, meaning nighttime. Now this is called, I don't know if you've heard the phrase, Sagi Nahar. Sagi Nahar is a euphemism in a blind person that he's got enough light. You know, he sees the light. And that's a way of being nice about it and not, you know, ramming it into him that he's living in darkness. So here too, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the choice of the Mishnah R is a Lashon Saginar. It's a euphemism to describe Lila. Lila is not a time of light, but we don't want to call it darkness. You know, that's like very depressing and bleak, despair. So we call it light. But it really means, paradoxically, light means darkness here. It means Lila. Kasalka Daitach, at this point, the Gemara is already giving a clue that the Gemara is going to change its opinion, but that's not going to come for a long time. Kasalka Daitach, right now we have to assume the following. Demandiyom Nahagi Nahagi Mamish, Umandiyom Leili Leili Mamish. That according to Rav Huna, the time for Bdikas Chometz is Boker, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the time for Bdikas Chometz is Laila. That's the assumption now, and based on that premise, the Gemara is going to embark upon many different proofs, one way or the other, from different texts of Brisos, and even perhaps Psukim in the Torah, to prove that the word R means either day or it means night. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says the following. Orli arbos or garsinon. Okay, that's our girsa. And then Rashi says, l'or haner. Why do we need a candle? The Gemara mefarish taima. Rashi says, hold your breath. The Gemara is going to actually establish why we need a candle. And that's based on psukim. But now, Rashi, Divrei HaMaskil Bodkim, and you can't underline this with enough underlines, Rashi answers the question, what is the reason for Bedikas Chometz? Says Rashi, Shelo Yavar Olav B'Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah. The Torah says that you're not allowed to possess Chometz. Check Chometz in your house, get rid of it, because otherwise you might violate Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah. Now, Rabosai, there are two premises in Rashi that have to be analyzed and should be taken under a careful magnifying glass. Number one, Rashi is assuming that if I don't do the bedika, and in fact I don't find the chametz, and I don't even know that I have chametz, it's just a makom shemachnisim bo chametz, as we said before, once during the course of the year he entered with chametz, I don't know if there's chametz there, he would be in violation of Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah.
Would, I was waiting for you to say he would be, I wanted you to say he might be.
Or he might
be. Might be.
So why would he, what's the Hava meaning here in Rashi? Why would Rashi assume that he might violate Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah? I mean, if the chametz is hidden away somewhere, and he doesn't even know about it,
it's still here.
Yeah, but Bal Yirah means I shouldn't see the chametz. He's not going to see the chametz. Unless you're saying chametz has wings. You know, maybe the chametz will pop out of something. You know, he threw the chametz on his rafter, and all of a sudden a wind came, and the chametz fell from his rafter.
You might go down to your wine. Your wine is kosher Pesach. You could go down there. Most wines are kosher Pesach.
So you might see it.
You might say. You might find it.
But if you're not over on
So this is going to be a gigantic issue. Do you violate Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah on what's called Chomet She'ena Yiduolo? And there are going to be two different Girsos in the Rambam about Chomet She'ena Yiduolo. He doesn't know about the Chomets. Is there a violation? You could say if you don't know about a Chomets, he's an anus, so to speak. You know, he didn't know about the Chomets. You can't hold him responsible. But others say that if he doesn't know about the Chomets, that's not called Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah. There's another gigantic premise in this Rashi that also has to be taken under advisement. And that is that Rashi is assuming that the method to avoid this problem of Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah is Bedikas Chometz. L'chora, I have a different method. Excellent. You're worried about the possibility that maybe he'll find Chometz on Pesach because he didn't do a Bedika. Let him just make a Bittul. So where's the Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah? Again, two different arguments against Rashi over here. That's going to lead us to this Tosus R. Number one, I could argue against Rashi that there is no Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah in Chomet She'ena Yiduah, and therefore he has no requirement to Bedika. And number two, even if I require you to do Bedika because he might possibly find the Chomet on Pesach, I have an alternative method. I can circumvent any violation of Bal Yirah U'Bal Yimotzah by simply requiring Bittul. In fact, the Gemara is going to say that even after the takana of Bedika, we still require Bittul, as Tosfos is going to point out for the sugya later on Daf Vav. So if at the end of the day I'm required to do Bittul anyway, why do I bother with this Bedika? Rashi's saying the whole thrust of the Bedika is to avoid Bayra Bayim Matzah. I was Mavata my Chavitz. And the Torah says and recognizes that if he's Mavatil is Chavitz, for him it's not Chavitz, and he doesn't violate Bayra Bayim Matzah.
Isn't there really a
in a violation of a lav? I don't know that there is a distinction between between lechatchila. The whole distinction between a lechatchila and b'di'evad is only in a mitzvah saseh. Here we're talking, according to Rashi, about two lavim. There's no lechatchila b'di'evad. You know, she's either pregnant or she's not pregnant. There's no halfway pregnancy here. Either you violated by your own matzah, or you didn't violate by your own matzah. So Rashi's assuming that in fact he might violate by your own matzah if he doesn't do b'dika. But the answer is he did bittul anyway. Pirush HaKuntri says Tosfos Shelo Yavar Olav V'Balyiro Bayimotz V'Kosha L'Ri Kevon D'Tzarech Bittul. In any event, he's going to have to be Mevatel Schomitz. He's going to have to make a declaration that all Schomitz is Ka'afra the Yar, it's like the dust of the earth. Can I read a big Gemara? The Gemara is going to say Abodik Tzarech Shivatel, which means we're not going to rely on his Bedika. You know, maybe his Bedika is kind of faulty and he won't, and he might miss Schomitz even if he does the Bedika, you know, as much as he put in an effort. You know, but who wants to climb up to the attic, you know, to look for chametz? So therefore the Chacham required that he do bittul. And the Gemara establishes another principle. This you have to underline. This is the Gemara Daf Dalet. Umido raisa bebittul bialma sagi. If you're not familiar with those four words, you must memorize them. Those four words are the key to everything you're going to be learning in the first parak of Masechta Pesachim. Umido raisa bebittul bialma sagi. I need a choir over here. When I count to three, we all sing this together. Are you ready? One, two, three. Midoraisa bebitul bealma sagi. Now, I've heard better choirs in my life. That's the truth. We need a baritone. There's no harmony here. But the point is, why do I go through this thing of having a choir? Because I cannot overemphasize the significance of those four words. You've got to have them charut belibcha. It's got to be mamish engraved in your brain and your heart. Midoraisa bebitul bealma sagi. The Torah says that if you do bittul, there's no bayiro bayimotza. How that works, I don't know. Is it hefker or is it some sort of, you know, kiafra diara? It's not chametz for me. I don't know what it is. But there's an entity called bittul. And the Torah says sagi. Sagi means you can totally rely on bittul. So if you're already doing bittul, because the Gemara says we're not going to rely on your bedika, so drop bedika. What do you need bedika for? It cannot be that the thrust and the purpose of bedika's chametz is to avoid bayir avay matzah. You've already achieved your goal because you recited bittul. Is a mayit zrichu chachamim bedika klal v'nira l'ri? And here the reed disagrees with Rashi in a very fundamental way and has a whole different perspective on Bedikas Chametz, which is the subject of our learning probably for the next 2 months. Nira l'reed, the Afa gav the sagi bebitul bialma. Nevertheless, the Chachamim instituted Bedika for a different reason entirely. And what's that going to be, Rav Osai? Again, I need a choir. When I count to three, we're going to all say together, Shelo Yavo Liachlo. One, two, three. Shelo Yavo Liachlo. Rabosei, are you following what's going on here? Tosfos is leaving Rashi way behind him. The problem here is not ownership of chametz. You've already solved that problem through what? Bittul, because midor rice, everybody. Bittul bialma sagi. But the problem is, imagine you did bittul on a beautiful cake. You know, when I was a kid, we had a bakery in my neighborhood in Brooklyn called Chiffon's Bakery. Okay, I don't know if it still exists on Coney Island Avenue. You know, when my wife goes on a trip to America, when she shows up on Coney Island Avenue, after that, we got to do damage control. Because I would need at least a half a year's worth of my salary, my fantastic salary here, to support what goes on in the... In fact, there's a grocery store, I don't know what to call it, a supermarket, I don't know what you call it, called Pomegranate. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. You can fill the entire block of Emek Rifaim with just the dips that they sell in pomegranate. You know, if you want to take home on Shabbos, you know, various kinds of containers of it. So Coney Island Avenue is a very dangerous place to send your wife. It's going to be very expensive. And there used to be a beautiful bakery there. I don't know if it still exists on Coney Island Avenue. It was called Chiffon's Bakery. I guess in every city in the world where there's Jewish people that want kosher food and a bakery, there's a great bakery. You know, I was in France, and there you have to go to a goyish bakery in order to get challahs for Shabbos. So the goyim there, the French goyim, know exactly, you know, how to make the challahs. Okay, whatever it is, the rabbi there in Spain also, I had the same thing. They give a hechsher on those challahs, you know. But Baruch Hashem, we live in religious neighborhoods. Imagine, you've got this big, everybody close their eyes and imagine this big, beautiful cake that's chametz gamur, and it's sitting on your table on Pesach, and it's everything's okay. As far as the Torah is concerned, wonderful. You can have a long beard in Pesach and you yotze everything, because you did bitter. Says Tosfos, there's a different reason for Bedika. Got to get rid of that piece of cake. Get rid of Chiffon's Bakery. Why? Again, all together, Shalo Yavo Liachlo. We're worried about Achilas Chavis. Very nice that you made Bittel. That's going to circumvent Balyarobay Matze, but it's not going to solve your problem, Shevi Yavo Liachlo. Fectosis. Oh, the chain mash will come on boy rova kika bishmei korah. If you have a loaf of bread that is on top of a rafter, he was playing rafter baseball with a loaf of bread. Does he have to do bedika? The Gemara says Dilma Zimnin did nafal, that maybe if he doesn't get rid of that piece of chametz on top of the rafter, it might fall the asi lemichle and he'll come to eat it. Imagine the scenario here. You've got a piece of chametz that's out of reach, totally out of reach, but it might fall and become accessible. The Gemara says you have to go up and climb up and get it, even if it's out of reach. Get yourself a big ladder. Why? Because it might fall and you might come to eat it. You see clearly that the Rabbanan were worried about achila, and therefore they said, get rid of your chametz. Frektos visvatam shechmiru kant femi bishari suriano. Why is it that in other Isurim, in other things that the Torah says you're enjoined from eating them or having any benefit, and we don't find bedika? The Torah doesn't require that you get rid of them. For example, there's something called Klai HaKerem, which is Asur Bana. Right? And there's something called Arla. Arla is the fruit of the trees the first 3 years. Or, for example, Basam Achalav, a mixture of meat and milk. All these cases are asur be'ana. We never found that a person, he brings arla into his house, now he has to make a bedika to get rid of all his arla. And the answer is, says Tosfos, what makes chametz unique in the constellation of isuri ana? Says Tosfos, and I'm going to ask you in a minute, is there one answer to this question in Tosfos, or is Tosfos offering two different answers? Let's read the Tosfos carefully. He says, Mishum de chametz mutar kol hashana velo nesa rak bepesach. Right, arla and klai hakerem, basam b'chol, are asur the whole year round. Once asur, always asur. But chametz is only asur for 7 days out of the year. So that same piece of Chiffon's Bakery that's calling out to me, I'm allowed to eat it for 300 and, who can make the math? 358 days. Again, in Chutzar, it's maybe 357 days. Right, so for all that time, the whole year round, I'm enjoying it. I'm fressing this beautiful piece of chametz. Is therefore Tosfos says velo bedili mine. Now I'm not sure if this is a separate answer or is Tosfos just fearing ice. You know, he's finishing up what he said before. Let's just translate these words lo bedili mine. Lo bedili mine. He's not separated from them. You know, he's not separated from this chametz. Kida amar lekaman. He says the Gemara later on says about chametz that lo bedili mine. He doesn't separate himself from chametz. You know, he looks at chametz and it's really something that the Torah allows him to eat the whole year round. For lo domin, it's not similar to basam b'chol v'arla v'klai kerem. These are the three classical cases of isurim, because there the isur is noeg isur olam. What does it mean, isur olam?
Always
the whole year round. It's always for me, and therefore bedili mina inch. The problem is going to be yayin to a nazir, and that will pick up tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. Nazir is only enjoined from drinking wine for a 30-day period. I mean, there is such a thing as a nazir shimshon, but we're talking about a classical nazir, stab nazir is shloshim yom, so it means that for 11 out of 12 months of the year he drinks wine, and that same wine now becomes also for 1 month. So therefore it's lo bedili minei. Maybe we should require that a nazir do a bedika and get rid of all the wine in his house. Stay tuned till tomorrow. I'm keeping you in suspense. Okay then? So Rabbosa, that was our introduction to the Sefta Pesach.
Shakar.